You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Well, Don and Ivan, we've had luminaries and stars and people of interest.
Porn stars.
What's that, Don?
Porn stars.
We have had porn stars on. We had a
male prostitutes.
We have had all those people on.
We've had. He was here, was he?
And Shane, he was actually.
Shane, we've had Shane on, anyhow. There you are. What did I say? This goes off timing. Seven times a day, a broadcast. But anyhow, Ivan and Don and listeners, this is we feel a bit nervous about.
Well,
this.
I am, because I did British history at school.
Right. Well, good on you. Well, so let me just tell you who we've got. We're about to speak to. He's an Englishman. He was a right-handed batsman for England. He was a medium to fast bowler. He was described as one of the greatest all-rounders of all time by Wisden. If you know who Wisden is, that's a cricket book, an official document on who is good and who's not in cricket. He made his test debut for England in 1977 against Australia. I'm just looking at him. I get any of this wrong. We get most of these things wrong. He was knighted, Don.
Really?
In 2007, he was knighted, made a sir.
Really?
Sir, yeah, really.
Does he live in a castle?
Wisden, the cricket aficionado, or the book, said this about him. I won't mention his name. This man's calmness and wit and sagacity, Don, which I think means it's intelligence, as a TV commentator is unsurpassed. But I haven't told you the best yet, he is a lord. He's in the, I don't know what that means, he's in the House of Commons
or the upper house.
He's a lord, and he probably won't do this in a minute if I stop speaking shit about this, but he is a lord, and in 1995, he took some elephants over the mountains at Nepal. He's a great benefactor and a great donator of money to charities. He's a star. I'd like to say he is a friend of mine. I've been with him on several occasions. And he is Sir Lord Viscount.
Hang on.
What?
No, you can't have all of those.
Yeah, he's a Marquis. He's everything. He is Ian Terence Botham.
Sir.
OBE. Sir Ian Terence Botham, OBE, and he's a Lord. Lord Botham. And I don't know if his wife, Baroness Baroness Catherine. What's her name?
Lady.
Baroness Catherine's out here, or Lady Catherine's out here, but we'll ask him. Ian, and he's got his manager here, he's just wincing at this. He's about to actually withdraw
the microphone's going out the window.
Yeah. Yep. And welcome, Ian. Thank you very much for doing this.
No, pleasure.
Now, I have known you. I spent a New Year's Eve with you 20 years ago, I think, in I think Shane Warne introduced me to you, I'm not sure how
we
you
played
came.
Golf, I think, at Capital. With Warney.
Yes, that's right.
And then you sort of had a role in a rose bush.
Cactus bush. I was drinking in those days and I became absolutely fly blown. And I was so drunk, I fell into a cactus bush and didn't realise I had pricks sticking out of me. And it was the hottest day recorded in Melbourne history. It was 48 degrees, or it was 46 degrees that night, I think, where we were down in Brighton.
So we ended up having a swim, I think.
We had more than a swim. So anyhow, Ian, I know you're out here, of course, following your vocation, which is commentating on cricket. And it would be remiss if we didn't ask you to start. What in the hell is going on with your former side that you made famous? You told me a very interesting stat that they hadn't won a test in Australia for 150 years or something.
Yes, it's not quite 150 years, but it's
it so seems welcome
like
anyhow.
It, it seems like it. What went wrong? A lot of things went wrong. Selection, winning the toss, wrong decisions, wrong team. Apart from that, they were pretty good.
So, do they get wary or do you get criticised for criticising or is they no. realise that that's your role?
Yeah, well, I don't really care, to be honest.
No, that's one. Good.
Because my job is to call it as I see it. And I'm very much involved with cricket in the UK. I'm chairman of Durham County Cricket Club. And so I'm pretty active. So I've got Ben Stokes and Mark Wood, who performed. Mark was brilliant, I thought, Woody, in the Test series. He was one of the shining lights of the England team. There weren't many.
Now, I'm just looking at the what we call the cadence bars here. If you could just pull the microphone a little, we wouldn't want our 7 millionth downloaded just not to hear the great Lord Botham speaking.
Any further.
That's it. That's fantastic.
Good.
So go ahead. Yep, so go ahead.
So, yeah, Woody, I thought, was a shining light in the England side. I thought his stamina, he was left out in Adelaide where he should have played. But, you know, to be honest with you, it was very disappointing. I thought a lot of it was gutless. And
gutless from what point of view?
No strength, no presence. You know, not actually at any stage making Australia sit back and think, oh, hang on a minute. You know, we've got a game on here. England were weak. They were weak.
Just passive, not being mischievous and not being gamesmanship, are you saying that
nothing,
they should?
There was nothing there.
Like you used to do and Lily used to do and Shane used to do?
But I think that's out of pride, isn't it? You do that because you want to be the best and you want to beat the best. And it's you know, Australia deserved better because we did not put any fight up at all. We capitulated and... embarrassing. It was embarrassing.
So if you mix with the players and the coach and everything, which you wouldn't, they know that you've said this about them.
I've told them.
And that is received as it should be? Or do they say, do they get a bit, do they get pissed off or not?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think there are any grounds to be pissed off. To be honest with you, what happens on the field, that's where you do the talking. And there was none. There was nothing there. From the moment we won the toss in Brisbane, you had overcast conditions, a green wicket, and we decided tactically it'd be a good idea to leave the two bowlers with 1,156 wickets between them sitting in the grandstand and carrying the drinks. And we decided not only was that a mistake, the second mistake, biggest one, was we decided to bat when we should have put the Australians in and bowled, had first go at them. And for someone like Stuart Broad, David Warner, for the last 2 months, would have been waking up in a cold sweat seeing Stuart Broad come round the wicket at him, as he did, and gave him another pair in the last test. He's had two pairs in his career, and both have been inflicted on him by Stuart Broad. But we leave him in the grandstand.
So you're saying this is a monumental failure, I'm not putting words in your mouth, with selection, with the culture of what's going on in English Test cricket, and you think, are you saying that there has to be a change? And I know what you said to me. I'm very reticent to use private conversations in a public forum, but do you think they will make some changes?
A lot.
Do you think they will...
From the very top all the way down.
What about the coach?
From the very top all the way down.
Can I mention who you said you thought might be asked or not?
No, go for it.
Did you think Ricky Ponting might be asked?
Has that
already been publicised?
Well, I put it out in the press.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry.
Well, when I say I put it out in the press, I just let it slip that... I just said, I wonder if Ricky Ponting would want to do this job.
I see. So, and do you have some insight
in... nibbles.
Do you have some inside information?
No,
have you spoken to Ricky, who's a great golfer, incidentally?
Yeah. No, Ricky's not going to do that. I wouldn't do it. Why would you want to do that? You know, he's
well, it's a good test. It can only go up.
But I think he's got his commitments with the IPL
and
everything else, and Channel 7, where I've worked with him all summer. So No, I don't see Ricky.
Why don't you have a role in it, whether you're the coach or an advisor or a
I don't have
man
the patience.
Who stands at the door and shouts at people? What?
I don't have the patience to do that. No, I would be pulling hair out.
Maybe it needs someone who doesn't have the
maybe,
patience.
Maybe, yeah. Look, maybe somewhere along the line I can help and get involved. I'd be quite happy to do that.
But do you think it comes back to a coach, isn't it, the players?
Exactly, Don. Exactly.
And also, I watched England. You said about presence. I watched them when Australia went over there. What happened? I thought they put the shits up the Australians. Now, what's happened to Jofra Archer? Now, he was lethal.
He's injured. He's been injured. He's hardly played, really, for England at test level.
Really?
He's had to have a second operation on a fractured elbow. How he did that, I don't know. But he needs a second operation, which he's just had, apparently. And hopefully, I don't know whether he'll make the West Indies, the Caribbean in March. It's where England go next. Hopefully he does, because with Mark Wood and Jofra Archer, you've got a formidable pace.
Well, that's where I just listened to you say about presence before. Don't you think it's the fast bowlers that stamp the presence and then the rest of the team kind of fits in? They have the ball first, don't they?
Yeah, look, they need you need everyone pulling together, and you don't need little divisions here and little divisions there. You need a team to come together. You'll know that from your days. And Sam certainly knows that from his days. So you need to be a unit. And I don't think we were a unit. I think there was too many things going on.
Personality conflicts?
Well, there'd be COVID. Like, you're on the on the tour for a long time. Like, you wouldn't have been home too for a long time.
No.
So that'd have to play a role.
But what's slightly frustrating with all that is that everything the England team wanted, they got. So they did their...
What do you mean by that?
Well, when they came over with the COVID restrictions of coming into Australia, they then were at Sanctuary Cove for 2 weeks to do their quarantine period up in Queensland. And then when the wives came in, they were in the Yarra Valley, I think, at some boutique place. And so they got everything they wanted, but then came out, and I thought it was, I've got to be honest with you, it was embarrassing to watch. And it's very difficult to call on the television, because what I really wanted to say, I couldn't say. Because I'd have been banned for the life.
So they came out for a holiday, in other words.
Do you know what? I really don't know what they came for. I really don't. Because of some of those guys, I don't think were that desperate to play, if they wanted to play at all.
But
just, I seriously got the impression some guys would rather be in home.
But Ian, there's an old saying, never blame the blokes who work for you, blame the blokes who employ you in the first place. It comes from the top office, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And if you stand for that sort of mediocrity, if you stand for that, then it just, you've got no chance if it, because you've got to speak to the lowest common denominator, and if he doesn't get the message from the top, and it needs someone like you, someone who will actually call it as it is, who... I know and ever put the fear of God into you, but who got your attention when you played and you thought, oh, shit, this is going to be a good
usually
day?
Usually my captain. Usually
pardon?
Usually the skipper, the captain of the side. When I first started, it was Brian Close, who was very famous for being tough, hard.
Was he?
And he was. He was a seriously tough man. And he was, Viv Richards and I made our first class game debuts together.
In the mid-70s?
Yeah, 74.
Yeah.
And Brian was the captain. And Viv and I, if Viv was sat here now, he would tell you exactly what I'm going to say now, and that is he kept our feet firmly on the ground, because the two of us came out the blocks flying, and it would have been very easy to have gone in the wrong direction. But he was very much the guardian angel and the captain. And
hang on, you said Viv Richards. What are you playing, county cricket?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, playing for Somerset. We both played for Somerset.
Oh,
for
got it.
15 right. years together.
Right.
12 years, 15 years.
Right. Now, someone said to me, I don't know if this is a rumour or not, did you share a share house with Viv Richards?
Yeah, we had a great time until the wives put a stop to it.
How would that be?
So when I said no one put the fear of God in you... as a player, when you came out and played Australia, was that was the Thompson Lilley era?
Yeah,
please, if I can remember that.
Yeah, Dennis.
Who did put the fear of God? Not put the fear of God. Who got your attention? Because you're saying Don said the fast bowlers are the people who set the tone. Absolutely. If they can whistle a few around the chops and that and make you stand up and attend. Who got your attention?
Well, if you actually think back to the West Indies of the late 70s and early 80s. Yep. Most of them.
Yep.
I had to pay a lot of attention to Andy Roberts, Michael Holding, Joel Garner.
Ambrose.
Yeah, you Paul name Lloyd. It. Yeah, on
bowlers.
No, but the bowlers, no. But when they lost to Australia over here in the late 70s, Clive Lloyd said, I will never leave the Caribbean without a battery of fast bowlers. And if you think back to the teams that played in that period, they had, you went from, Andy Joel. Roberts was probably the godfather.
Garner.
Garner, Holding.
Marshall.
He came later. He was in the next wave, along with Curtly Ambrose and Courtney Walsh, Patrick Patterson. You know, these guys, they came, you know, there was a barrage of fast bowlers.
So I'm not a great cricket devotee, but I presume the West Indies are not as great as they any good at the minute.
But to be honest with you, that was probably, in that period, that West Indian side was probably the best side that's ever played cricket.
Okay, so why haven't they had replacements? Have they dropped the ball as well?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Do you think athletics is playing too big a part in Jamaica or the West Indies right now? The top athletes seem to go to athletics.
Jamaica's produced sprinters. Usain Bolt being the pick of them. But there's been plenty of others. Michael Holding was qualified.
Beautiful.
He was
runner.
A 400 meter runner.
Yeah, beautiful.
And he could have represented the Jamaica in the Olympics. You know, he was. I used to watch him go to the Adelaide Oval before they changed the oval, when it was much bigger. When you guys would have been down to Adelaide, and the boundaries. He used to run around that, and I was exhausted watching him. He got round. I went round the square in the middle, and he went round the perimeter. But he had a rate of knots.
Yeah, I know.
Magnificent athlete.
Now we like to shout about how great the MCG is as a cricket stadium. I know you can have 90 or 100,000 people there, but is that important to have a big crowd, or is it important to have tradition? Is it as good as we think it is, or we get over the top of our skis a bit?
Well, no, you don't. I've got one thing I want to do on my bucket list, and that is the grand final, AFL. I want to come and do that.
But didn't you come to that? You played for university, didn't you?
Yeah, I played at uni.
Yeah, Beg your pardon?
Billy Picken?
Yeah.
Well, I met Billy at the Hilton, or whatever it's called now, the one by the ground.
Yeah.
And I got to meet him, and I said, you play that game with no rules? And he laughed, and he said, why don't you come down? So I went down to Collingwood, and we kicked a few balls a couple of days later, and then its association I grew from there. Nathan Buckley, I gave him his jersey. So, you know, big affiliation with Eddie and the boys down there, and sadly Eddie's not there now.
Yeah, but you were playing, and this interests me because I followed district cricket.
Mm.
Why did you come to Melbourne, and why did you play for university?
I came over in the Scottish nearest. I've got to further education, I can assure you. But I actually, when I came over, I came on a scholarship. It was Whitbread, the brewery, who sponsored. So there's myself and Graham Stevenson, who sadly is no longer with us. We're in Melbourne. And the other two boys were Mike Gatting and Bill Athey, and they were in Sydney. So the four of us were sent over. And I played for uni. It was the wettest summer on record in Melbourne. I played 4 days cricket.
The whole season?
The boys used to pick me up in the car, and we'd go down to Sorrento, Lawn, or wherever down the coast. And the boys said, come on, we'll do a bit of surfing. So, what's surfing? So got the board out, we went out, had a bit of fun, and that evening went back to the pub to have a couple of beers on the way home before we came home, and there had been a shark attack, and that was the last time I ever picked up a surfboard. And the last time, and Sammy knows this, because when I'm on the boat, when I was lucky enough to be on Sam's boat the other day, he got in for a swim, not a cat.
No, we couldn't get him in.
I wouldn't go in either.
No, you know, we used to have club together, couldn't throw him in.
Well, it's not good when the driver just bails out and goes for a swim.
Exactly.
Someone had to drive the boat.
Yeah, I did a good job, I thought.
Ian, you've had a controversial life, which has made you the superstar that you are, because you're not bland and beige. You're out there and you've raised millions for charity by your what's the word, philanthropic work. Was it an absolute thrill to be knighted? To go? Did you go to Buckingham Palace and meet the Queen? You're a royalist, I presume.
Very
a
much
savage
so.
Royalist.
Yeah, very much so. Very proud. I think she's an amazing woman, the Queen.
She is an amazing woman.
Absolutely amazing.
Yes, she is.
Right on the button.
Yep.
She's very clever, very good. And
so you got the letter and they said, we're going to bestow the honour on you.
But the hardest part of that was that the letter comes through your letterbox, right, and you've got the seal. And I'm thinking, either this is good news or very bad news. So I'm not sure which way it's going. So I opened it up and you read through it. You've been offered the honour of knighthood, etc. Will you accept it? Well, that took about 1.5 seconds to write yes. Yeah. But the thing at the bottom part was, please do not tell anybody until it's officially announced. And that's the hardest part.
And how long did you have to keep that?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So that was quite hard. And I didn't tell my mother, God bless her, she's no longer here, but if she
And you didn't
out,
tell her?
No. It'd be the last, but everything in the whole world would have known within about 24 hours. So, the only people that knew were my two eldest children and my wife.
So just tell us how it works, because probably Don and I Ivan here, Paul, never going to be knighted. probably I could safely say that. So then you you get the date and you dress up and you put the penguin suit on.
I could have very much.
Who got knighted with you?
There was only two of us, and luckily I was the second one. So the first one was the Queen's private secretary who was retiring.
I see.
So he got knighted, and so that was a help because I can watch what he did to get himself through it, because it's quite interesting. You walk in and you walk along and you get to this, if you can imagine this table and the Queen's sat there in the middle, you come in at this edge and you turn, bow, walk to the middle, turn, bow, and then you're called forward.
So that's... 14 years ago, and she would have been 80. She'd be 80-something, And she was nice and lucid and spoke
Fantastic.
To you.
Unbelievable. Yep. And spoke to every single person. There was 99 people that were honoured that morning, and she stood there and spoke to every single
No, that's
one.
What I said. Not 99 people were given knighthood.
No, two knights, and then there's OBEs.
Yes.
So what are your duties as a – is it a lord or –
Now, the Lordship came afterwards. That gives me the right to vote in the House of Lords. And
it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
So do you actually go and sit?
Yeah.
Really?
Do you?
I haven't gone down recently because of COVID, because no one's gone down recently. When I actually did my oath, usually there's 400 people in the chamber. There was 12. And so it's all geared up with the microphones. So it was really off-putting because... As I said it here, it echoed there, echoed here, echoed there, all the way around. So that was a little nervy. But I went down.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's lovely.
So
you're over there. I'd love to take you some. You can come and see it.
Wow. Mick Jagger's been knighted, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And Elton John.
Yeah, Elton.
And do you ever get together with any of the celebrities, or is it a little clique, or you have a dinner every now and again, or not?
No. We're all in different parts of the world most of the time.
Yeah.
I know Mick, know him pretty well, and I certainly know Elton. And Elton actually, in 86-7, he actually arranged his tour to coincide with where we played.
Oh, really? He's a very keen cricket follower.
Yeah, and he was, he loves all sport, in fairness. Yeah. But he had, I remember when we won the Ashes at Melbourne after the third test, we had he threw a party at the apartments where we were staying, the team, at the top floor, and he became EJ, the DJ.
Most expensive DJ in the world.
Yeah.
So just getting back to the credit, how do the press and the English public, how have they viewed what's gone on out here? This have they been ripped a new one, have they? Or
they felt after 2 years of lockup, everyone was excited, probably more so than ever. I did the advert for Channel 7 in a castle in the UK, where us and them and yep. us are at the advert. And we did that, and everyone was pumped up for it. I actually thought we'd compete. I don't think I actually ever really thought we'd win, but I thought we'd compete. And we didn't. We capitulated, and it was pretty pathetic.
Do you think that same thing happens to Australia? I find it frustrating when Australia goes to England and England yeah. seem to have the upper hand.
Yeah.
Is there, do you think there should be uniformity of wickets, or do you think the uniqueness of it is the difference in the wickets?
I think what we need to do now, England, we need to play on better surfaces, so good pitches, and as I never thought I'd say this in my
Hang
entire...
Hang on, why are your pitches bad?
No, because of the change of temperature. We start in April, May, you can have snow. And you go through to the end of September. So there is a contrast, but also there is a priority has become white ball cricket. And so we play at the start of the season, at the end of the season, and in between it's mainly one day cricket.
Bad bit of timing that, Donny. Never thought you'd ever say what?
What?
You're about to say, you thought you'd never thought you'd ever say something, and
yeah. No, well, I'm coming to that now.
Sam. Oh, yes, good.
I never thought I'd say that we should perhaps use the Kookaburra ball.
Oh, I see.
Because I think that a lot of our cricket is played on wickets that are responsive to the seam. And I just think a ball that has less seam might make us better players, better bowlers. Because if you have balls that aren't giving you as much assistance, then you have to work harder and you have to home in your skills.
Well, who makes the balls in England?
Duke.
Well, why can't they replicate? Or they don't want to, you mean?
Tradition,
yeah.
Now, Ian, you've had some, like all of us, this is what makes you a star, some controversial things with Mr. Imran Khan and Mr. Chappell and the grouse hunting bird watchers, whatever you did over there. it's a fascinating career that you've had, and tell us about the elephants. Why did you? That must have been an interesting trek across the Himalayas at Nepal.
When I went from Perpignan,
yep.
over the top of the Alps into Turin, and we had these three elephants. There were four at the start, one pulled up lame. They came from an Italian circus, so they never really had freedom. And we gave them freedom.
Yep.
And they came over, and they had a really tough time. They had this great big air-conditioned transporter that took them from the start. They used to walk 100 yards with me at the start, and the last 100 yards at the end of the days.
Oh.
So the rest of the time, they were rolling around in a field, getting all the French or the Italians feeding them. They had a great time.
Magnificent.
But they became, they're very bright, very intelligent animals. And to the extent where I was actually pushing Becky, who was then my youngest daughter, she would have been about 18 months, 2 years old. And I was pushing her in the chair, pram. And when you got to over the Rhine River, you actually had, it was like a guttering, and it got caught up and flipped her out of the buggy. The elephant stopped. They were right behind me, stopped and picked her up.
Joking.
Picked her up and put her...
Is that right?
Put her onto the back of their neck there.
Good God.
Which she did every morning. So they just stopped and picked her up and put her on the head of the...
And you did that for what charity?
Leukemia.
Leukemia?
And lymphoma, yeah.
I've read, just. I know you'll be modest or embarrassed enough to, but I've read how much you've raised. It's a fantastic thing, isn't it? That
it's great.
You give something back.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And the public have been great with me. They supported me through thick and thin. And to do something like that, we ended up doing 19 walks, so around 10,500 miles in total, at a fair old rate, about 4.8 miles an hour.
So you're paying for it now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so why don't you tell us what's going on? Because you're not walking properly.
No, the left knee's completely...
So that'll be replaced?
Yeah.
Right knee all right?
Right knee, touch wood, is all right.
What about the hips?
Hips, brand new.
What do you mean brand new?
I had them put in... I had 22 months on crutches.
You're joking.
So I think about it now and I think, how do you get through that? But
and that's all through walking?
I think so, yeah. It might have been a bit of cricket, but I think it's the walking because you're also walking on the canvas of road. So you're never actually on flat level ground. So hence the hips. The spine was the first operation. I had a fusion in 87 and did all the walks and everything, no problems. And then suddenly it was a bit of a breakaway. It was a bone fusion and it was getting too close to the spinal cord. So they operated on that as 14 months recovery.
Is this from cricket?
No, I think no, walking. From
walking.
Oh, just walking.
I think so.
No, when I say just walking, walking.
Just walking. Really? 10,500 miles. Yeah.
Holy mackerel!
I think that's, put it this way. I think that was the icing on the cake to finish off. So the right hip disintegrated while I was on crutches with the spine. So that is probably the most painful time I've had. So they did the right hip. They took that out, and as I left the hospital. I'm walking out of the hospital and the nurses are there. I said, thanks, girls. Yeah, wonderful. They said, we'll be seeing you soon. I said, what? He said, you haven't seen your left hip, have you? And bloody right, 4 months later, that came out.
Wow.
Where did you get that done?
Near home, yeah.
Now, while we've been speaking, a very dapper-looking gentleman has just walked into the room here. Is he your golf partner?
He's my golf partner today, my wonderful off-spinning mate, who we toured in 86-7. He was there when Elton was jamming away, John Embry. So I stayed with the Embrys last night and did my usual trick and went to sleep on the settee.
but John, you're not. John hasn't got a microphone, unfortunately. But you're not domiciled in Australia, are you?
No, but I spend about 3 months a year in Australia.
This is a very bad radio, this, isn't it?
Yeah. I can tell you, he spends 3 months of the year. His wife comes from here, Melbourne.
I see.
Susie and John's over here for probably 3 months a year. Pretty much as I am nowadays. So
come on, John, slide the chair over. I just want to
get Ian. Can I talk to you as an athlete?
Yeah,
I watched. Actually, I watched you. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you're an inherently strong person. Mm. You have just an inherent physical strength. Am I right in that assessment?
As my physio would tell you, he said. He always said that. He doesn't do pain. And the only time I've ever really felt sorry for myself or painful was that 22 months on crutches. But no, I got through that. And if you can get through that, you can get through anything.
Yeah, but I'm talking about your attributes as an athlete. Yeah. That I saw you running off a short run, yet you could, you know, you could work up a bit of space, you know, pace with the ball. I thought, shit, that's just strength.
Yeah, I think I was physically strong.
Hence the nickname Beefy.
Yeah. Correct. So.
So what about you're an all-rounder. What did you consider yourself better at, bowling or batting?
Well, the important thing was I had to be doing something because, as Embers would tell you, I was a pain when there was nothing going on in the dressing room. So I'd cut the ends of socks off. Yeah, I put some.
You're a smart ass.
Yeah. You'd have hated me, don't you?
So we've managed to slide Embers, as Lord Botham calls him. We've managed to slide Embers over in front of a microphone here. Now, you mightn't have heard, I don't know if you got here, but Ian was giving an assessment of the English cricket side out here this summer. would you concur and would you be just as strong in your opinions and wouldn't mind them broadcast back home? If you could speak into that, please. John Embry.
Hugely disappointing.
Come in here, please, mate. We want people to hear
you. Well, why don't you move your microphone?
The thing won't go any further.
Hugely disappointing. I was down at Metung doing some fishing there with a friend of mine, doctor friend of mine, and test match was on. And I came back midway through the test match. And I said to him, that's probably the worst performance I've seen from an England side overseas for a very long time. Very difficult for me to criticise them because I am one of the scouts back in England.
For what? Talent?
For talent, yeah, and making recommendations to the selectors. And we haven't got a massive talent pool to choose from.
Why? Because of other sport?
Not so much other sport. It's just I think the quality of the coaching that we have now isn't quite up to shape. I think Ian mentioned about our structure of our domestic first-class cricket, where we have championship cricket at the beginning of the year, championship cricket at the back end of the year. Spinners are unable to develop because when the wicket's meant to turn in the drier periods at the end of the summer, then we got very, very little cricket. We had about three or four matches left at the end of the season, and it's far too short. And at the beginning of the season, we have about nine of our championship matches, and that's normally when it's damp and the pitches are green and it doesn't suit spin. And then you've got that middle period of the summer where we play one-day cricket, and the spinners don't get too much of an opportunity there. Or if you're not a one-day cricketer, there's no other cricket for you to play. And it's difficult.
You're not whingy.
No. We were very poor. And hopefully we turn it around in the next few years.
Now,
and
John,
when Australia come, we're going to turn you over.
Just why are you... You say you live in Australia for 3 months of the year. Why is that?
Well, I'm married to an Australian.
Oh, so sorry about that.
I've been coming out for 40 years. Ian mentioned that he came out with the Whitbread Scholarship in 1976-77. In 1977-78, I came out on the same scholarship.
Snared an Australian.
It was in 77, it was, yeah. But actually in London, not Melbourne.
Oh, you met her in London?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But I played cricket for Prahran.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
In 77-78, and then I came back and played club cricket in 79-80 and played for St Kilda.
Well, he's got one up on you because his missus is Lady Catherine.
Yeah, well, yeah. Long way for me to go, yeah.
So how does... thank you, John. How does Lady Catherine handle all this? And she been a great support? And well, she go to any of the gala functions at the palace? Or
we were sat yesterday in the flat, at John's flat, and we were sat there having a glass of wine and chewing the cud, so to speak. And I rang my wife. And I just said to Embers, well, that gives us half an hour free, doesn't it? And I just, so there was Kath and Susie, or Decibel, as I call her, because she, sometimes I can hear her. I can hear her from the other side of the world.
Oh, but, fantastic.
But she's always been called. I'm the only person that calls her that. So Susie and Kath, very close. And so that was it, half an hour. We could have a couple of beers and enjoy ourselves.
Now, Shane's a great friend of mine, and I'm sure he's a great friend of yours. I keep saying if cricket was a world-class sport, he'd be the biggest pop star in the world. He's incorrigible, Shane, and made his whole career out of that ball to getting.
Yeah, the ball of the century, wasn't it?
It was.
But you know, look, Warnie and I never played against each other. We
didn't
missed
you?
By about a month.
I see.
And I was over here, and he just came on the sign, and we both with Nike, and I'm still with Nike. I don't think Warnie is now, but we did this advert, the mystery ball, and we did shot it at the SCG, and that's when I first met him and spent some time with him, and then the two of us have played golf all around the world now. He's a good mate, a really good mate, and just a pleasure to be with. Because unless people know him and understand him, they won't get it. And you know, I get it very. I know exactly what Warnie's about, and I tell you what, he's a good man. He's a good man.
Now you don't think groundswell of us to what's the country that in now? What's the country that's just gone independent from? Left the India? No, who's
India's got its independence, isn't it?
No, who just
Barbados?
No, just recently. Oh, that's right. Yeah,
Barbados. Yeah,
they've left the Commonwealth. What about us? So, you think you'd advise us to stay on? And
hang on, if I were you,
you'd stay on, yeah, would you? Yeah. Don't worry about being
part of the thing. Also, I don't need any more hassle traveling here.
No, that's true.
So it's been tough recently, but you know, we've all done it tough, and it's been hard.
You haven't had COVID? You have had
twice.
You've had it twice.
Well, I had it. I had it in 2020.
Holy mackerel!
General. And then I got it here a week ago. I didn't do the Sydney game. We get tested every couple of days on Channel 7, and it came up positive, and I thought, well, that's weird, because I've had it, and I've had all the injections.
Meant to be the greatest immunity of all time, having it once.
So I looked at it, so I tested it again the following day. I went to get PCR done in Heidelberg. I went there, which I think is what the boys in the AFL used all the year for testing. Went there, shut down for the week. We're having a week off. Oh, thank you very much. So, and then went to, found another place in South Melbourne, Johnson Street. We went there and got tested. Luckily for me, Rod, who you mentioned earlier, he had to go up to Sydney. So I got the flat. And so I had the flat with the balcony overlooking the beach. Yep. And I tested every day. And on the sixth day, when I got my PCR result, it said, you're positive. The next morning, I was a text saying, oh, you're free to go now. 7 days are done.
Yeah.
Shambles.
But to be honest with you, mate, I had no symptoms. I had nothing. Nothing at all.
So which is half the world, half the country, this country is... claims that they, well, they say they test positive for COVID, but it's probably, for most cases, nothing more than a cold.
Exactly.
Well, it's easy to say that, but gee whiz, we get some information.
That's the way it's gone in the UK now. They've a week ago, we had 200,000 cases. Each day it's come down, and deaths have come down, and it's basically like a cold, if you get any symptoms at all. Because it's much weaker than, like a lot of these things, when they mutate, they tend to get weaker. And that's the case with the Omicron.
So don't talk about this if you don't want to, but why would we have a difference of opinion with Ian Chappell? Where does that go back to, and why?
Do you know what?
I know you're probably sick of answering all those questions.
To be honest with you, look,
it just comes up when you read about you. It comes up about that, and
I have no
the
problem.
Bird Society. You had a Royal Society of Protection of Birds. You had a run in with them.
I've taken that lot on all the time. Yeah, don't worry about that.
Because you shoot grouse, do you, or something?
Shoot grouse, pheasant, partridge.
Yeah. So then they jump up and down and say, "Why are you doing that?"
Not really. I think it's actually a class thing. They seem to think that we're elite.
Oh,
we're
I see. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I shoot with the farmers.
Yep.
Yeah, and the people on in the countryside where I live, and we've done this all our lives. We've looked after the countryside, so I'd really like the people that live in cities to stay there and shut up.
So, what sort of weapon do you use?
Tobble.
Well, you know a bit about it. I didn't say shut up.
Hey, listen, you two.
Now, hang on, Don. If I just may. Before, when I mentioned Ian Chappell, Mr. Embers here, he chuckled. Guffawed.
That's what we do all the time.
what was all that about? And do you actually speak to Ian Chappell or not?
No, I can't see the point, to be honest. But it's so long ago.
If you don't want to do it. No, it's boring. I just thought I might ask you.
Thanks,
that's
Dan.
All. Yep. Go on, Don. Sorry.
What do you mean, Don?
Now, listen, you two guys, it's fascinated me with the Commonwealth Games over the years in sport. Are you guys into sport or are you just into cricket?
No, I like sport.
Okay, tell me, why has England improved internationally in the sporting field in a number of sports? Cycling, there's been swimming. Well, rowing you've always been good at. You know, you've been up there. But... it seems to be England has now come up to the fore and is a world force in various sports. And it's only seemed to happen over the last 30 years. Is there a reason why?
I think there's more attention paid to sport now. And I think that cycling, we've always been pretty good at. And I think in the last Olympics, we won more medals than everyone. So...
Have you got sporting academies?
There's
got to be something that you could really, put it down to.
I think it's the fact that kids now play more sport at school because it's become compulsory, so they want exercise.
And so, funding, John says.
Hmm?
Funding.
And funding, yeah.
So where's the funding coming from, John?
Yeah, the lottery, national lottery.
Ah.
Oh, so
they have to make a donation. The lottery, and there's also a lot of private funding as well that comes into it. So people are more conscious about sport and doing well in
sport. Yeah, but if you've got a lottery going for you, you can have professional or get kids at a younger age, I suppose, and put them into academies and away you go.
So when did you last win the World Cup in soccer? Is that the
1966.
So that's been disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember I watched it.
Pardon?
I watched that final.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you? That's a hell of a long time ago.
Family holiday in 1966, so I'd have been 11. And my mother was furious because it went to extra time. And myself and my dad sat there and watched it all the way through and saw Jeff Hurst score his hat trick. And then we were allowed to go to down to the south coast.
So why is the Premier League the best league in soccer? Right. I consider the most entertaining league in soccer, yet it can't be transferred internationally.
No, because...
They're international players playing.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's...
Got to go home after it.
You can't... I couldn't name you the Chelsea side, for instance, now. I've got a better chance of Liverpool because there's more English people playing in that side. But it
who do you follow?
Scunthorpe United.
What?
Yeah. I'm president of Scunthorpe United.
Where are they?
Second from bottom of Division 2.
I think it's fantastic over there, all the divisions and the romantic names that these soccer clubs have got.
And my researcher here, Mr. Embers, says that... you would have seen the last World Cup soccer victory on black and white television. 1966.
It was actually, I think, yeah.
That's right. We got it in 66 here, black and white television, coloured television.
Yeah, I think it was. We might have had one of the first coloured televisions.
So they're almost as hopeless in relative terms as the English cricket side.
Yeah, well, that's probably a bit harsh. But the rugby team, English rugby team.
Yeah, they're good.
They're good, but not as good as Wales.
What? They're what?
Wales.
What, better? Jeez, those bloody Poms, they knocked us off in that world. Are you a...
That's my grandson, plays for Wales.
Does he really? Yeah. But shit, those bloody Poms, they were not bad in the rugby. Oh, fuck, they were good.
Well, look, it's been...
Hang on, Johnny, who do you support in the soccer?
Millwall.
Millwall?
I'm a Millwall supporter.
Really? So do you barrack for the team you grew up in the district? Is that the district you grew up in? And so played for Scunthorpe?
Yeah. And Yeovil. Scunthorpe United and Yeovil Town, and I turned down Premiership football.
What? You were recruited for top footy?
I was asked to play Crystal Palace.
Really?
Yeah, they wanted to sign me when I was 15, but I listened to my dad, and my dad said...
So what position did you play?
I used to play centre-half.
Really? Up forward?
Now,
and John, you played soccer?
I did, but more social soccer for a pub team. on a Sunday morning, it was more hit and kick rather than kicking the ball.
I think it's just fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
We used to wait for the final whistle and they'd tip into the pub at Sunday lunchtime.
Don, I don't know if he's exhausted. Ivan's only question Ivan asked was what bore was his shotgun or what. So that's a tremendous piece of information. So, Don, is there anything else you'd like to ask Lord?
No, I could talk to him about other things, but I don't want to.
You what?
Well, keep going.
Well, in that case, thank you so much for coming in,
thank you.
Mr. Botham and John.
Blimey, I know that you for being... call me Mr. Botham.
Oh, well, no.
That is a worry.
Thank you very much for coming in, and maybe we'll see you at the end of the week and we'll have a crack at the boat again.
Yeah, you're going to take the booger sugar with you,
No, Ian? John's always on about the drugs.
Oh, so
he thinks and the more he keeps saying it, the more people will believe that people get on the boat and that we don't do any of that. I don't drink and I don't do it. Ian,
why am I even commenting on this?
We
sat up the front, two of us. Sam went for a dive and a swim, and I sort of took the boat. We went along the coast a bit.
He did too. Yeah, steered it up there.
You let someone else steer. You won't ever let anyone else near the wheel.
Well, anyone who's not competent, Don. No, no, that'd be foolhardy to do that. Hey, thanks very much, mate.
Pleasure, mate. And, always a pleasure.
Now we got to just. This is how we end. I've just got to lean over here and do this.
Late at night, I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. back again. I'm just crazy about you.